This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Matt Doyle is producing. And today, a few days ago, we thought we would be talking about Hurricane Sally. And Sally, for the folks of Louisiana, fortunately went elsewhere. It's now honing in on Mobile Bay, and that's bad news for our friends in Alabama and in Mississippi. Louisiana will get some of the brunt of the storm, but once again, the Baton Rouge area and much of Louisiana dodged a bullet much more profoundly than we did 3 weeks ago when Hurricane Laura rammed Lake Charles and the surrounding area, and there's going to be recovery that will go on for years. But thank goodness that we're okay, and we're here to talk about a few other matters. And if you'd like to chime in, the number again, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. Mary Olive Pearson, one of the venerable attorneys in our community, as I said in the intro, a force of nature, has been around for a while and is never shy about speaking her mind, is here to talk about various and sundry things. And again, 877-217-5757, if you'd like to call in. And as yesterday was an example, and we had so many callers that we weren't able to get to the emails, and they were plentiful, as you can imagine, when Scott Wilfong was being Scott and making statements that were inflammatory to many of our listening audience. Mary Olive Pearson, who is a person who isn't shy about speaking her mind, has been on the forefront of trying to stop the Village of St. George from becoming a reality. How is that looking right now?
Well, from my standpoint and from the standpoint of my plaintiffs, the mayor and Councilman Cole and Lewis Unglesby, who are the authorized plaintiffs by statute, is looking really good. It always has. And the main problem that the supporters of St. George have is, unfortunately, it seems to be a national problem in this country today, is that lack of leadership. They don't really have a plan yet. And when I researched this legal action that could be taken after that election on October the 12th, I discovered that it is really the only situation in which, after an election, the voters, through legal action, can test the promises made by the people who put it on the ballot. In other words, you can have the people say, we would like the city of St. George, but the legal action says, well, come in here and prove that you can actually do it. And so I looked around the country, and it really is the only situation in which you can do that. You can't, I mean, if you have a politician that doesn't live up to his promises, you recall him. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, the statute provides that you not only have to win the election, if somebody challenges, we didn't challenge the election, we just challenged the incorporation. If we challenge it, they have to come in and prove, we can do this, we can do it in a reasonable time, and here's the killer. And it won't adversely affect any municipality in the area. That would be the city of Baton Rouge.
All right, so you're saying that it's a non-starter.
It really is to me, and I haven't seen anything since the litigation started from the other side to indicate mm-hmm. that they're even aware that that's their problem. I mean, just recently, in fact, in the last, I don't know, week, we got some discovery, which is, you know, they get to ask you questions and you have to answer them. They're still focused on whether or not Lewis Unglesby lives in Baton Rouge. I mean, I don't think that that's an important issue.
Well, he has a house in Baton Rouge, I know that.
Well, he lives in Baton Rouge. He practices law in Baton Rouge, and they want to know, does he live in the area of St. George? Well, his house is out there. He votes out there. Yeah. And so they've gone through 8 months of testing whether the mayor and Councilman Cole could be plaintiffs. Now they're turning to Lewis. They have not yet turned to proven that they can do what they say they can do. And by the way, they say they're going to do it with five people. They're going to run a city of 86,000 with five people.
And you, of course, have a dog at the hunt. You're a partisan and a very good one. The people in St. George say the people have spoken, all 54% of the people in St. George. What about those who say this should have been a parish-wide vote?
I'm one of those. I mean, I think that since we have a city-parish consolidated form of government, anything that affects the consolidation of the government should be voted on by all of the people in the government, which means all of the people in the parish. But unfortunately, the incorporation statutes, which apply, by the way, to all these little small villages out in Louisiana. The town of Ball has a lot of litigation. I mean, I never even heard of the place. But I mean, when you get down to talking about a city and a parish of our size, with all the development that we have, I don't think it's feasible to say, well, wait a minute, we could just let this little segment withdraw. But by the way, some of them claim, wrongly, that they became a city on October the 12th, the date of the election. And I've said to people, well, that's just not true. But in addition, if you had become a city on October the 12th and the coronavirus got here in March, you would be bankrupt by now. Their only source of revenue, according to their so-called plan, is sales tax. Well, when the businesses that provide sales tax were shut down, where are you going to get your money?
What's the next step on this?
Well, we got to deal with this discovery that was sent out to say that Louis Oglesby doesn't live in the area proposed to be St. George. We'll deal with that. And we have a status conference with the court on October the 28th. And as far as I can tell, ever since this thing started, they have tried everything to delay this process. They're telling the public that they want to hurry up and get it done. What they want to do is they want to hurry up and get over the real issues. Can you do this? And move on to something else. But every step they have taken has delayed the process.
877-217-5757 is your number. We will go to the phone lines in just a moment with Mary Olive Pearson. Before we go there, though, you've been involved in Janelle Matthews, elected to a judgeship in Baton Rouge, passed her 70th birthday, but she qualified before, and the courts have ruled that she is capable of being a judge, and she has been sworn in. She is now a judge. She got 63% of the votes. Her challenger, Wendy Higginbotham Green, got 37%. And you have called Wendy the sorest loser in the history of the world. Do you stand by that?
Absolutely. I've never seen anybody fight so hard that lost so big. And when I said that, it was before she had filed, like, I don't know, six writs, two appeals, and lost an election. I now call her the battery bunny from hell. She just will not quit.
She is resilient and tenacious.
I took the trouble just yesterday. I came to my office and I counted up the judges who have ruled in this case so far on the multiple appeals and writs and everything else. 20 judges have opined that Mrs. Matthews is right, Mrs. Green is wrong, and she's still going. So what do you think?
And Matthews is now a judge. It's hard to get rid of a sitting judge, isn't it?
Well, there's only one body that can do that, and that would be the Supreme Court. And I think that's where Ms. Green is headed next. Thank God. Maybe they can put an end to this madness. Look, it's just real simple. They relied on a clause in the Constitution that only applies to sitting judges, and correctly so. That was in the Judge Janice Clark case. Mm-hmm. The court said, this section of the Constitution withstands equal protection scrutiny because it only applies to a small group sitting judges and it only affects their retirement. So they have a rational basis for saying you can't run for re-election after you're 70 in office. Ms. Matthews was not in office. She's not seeking re-election. She was not 70 when she qualified. She would not have been 70 when she won the election if it hadn't been twice postponed. So the Clark case.
All right. Well, when is her next election?
I think it's 2024. Okay. She ran for an unexpired term of.
So she's got 4 years.
Basically. Okay. Well, it's actually maybe 3.5.
877-217-5757. Mike in Villa Del Rey, you're on the air with Mary Olive Pearson. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Ms. Pearson, I was deposed by you. I pity St. George. That's all I got.
Mary Olive is known as a ferocious adversary, and I would not want to be on the other side of a deposition with her. but who gets deposed in the St. George case?
Well, that case is going to depend on expert testimony and financial information, mm-hmm. mostly. And we've got some experts. We haven't hired them yet, but we're, you know, talking to some experts to talk about budgets, money, mm-hmm. Assets. And then you've got the problem of how are they going to pay for what it is that they want to take over, which is, you know, we put in a lot of improvements out in that part of town. Streets, roads, drainage, traffic lights, shopping centers, whatever. And I don't know how they're going to pay us for that, but maybe they think they can just take it.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. We'll continue the discussion. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Mary Olive Pearson back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We'll return to the phones in just a moment with Mary Olive Pearson. We do have a couple of lines open, 877-217-5757, if you'd like to join our conversation. And a reminder that this afternoon at 2 o'clock, it's Ask the Governor with Governor John Bel Edwards. Much to talk about with him. His 54th program, 54 consecutive months of doing Ask the Governor on his 54th birthday. So he'll be with us celebrating his birthday, born in 1966. 877-217-5757 is your number. And Mary Olive Pearson, we're 48 days away from the presidential election. You are a Democrat, have been since the day you registered, have never vacillated. You are unlike John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy and many Louisiana politicos who switch parties to get elected to high office, and you've remained a loyal Democrat, and I suspect you are supporting Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. over Donald John Trump. Why are you doing so?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I became 18, which is when you could register to vote, if you didn't register Democrat, you couldn't vote anytime because we didn't have open primaries. And so that's when I registered. Mm-hmm. And everybody in my family was a Democrat. Everybody in Louisiana was a Democrat.
Not everybody, but most everybody.
Well, the Republicans could have met in a Volkswagen. That's changed since then. But and it's now become apparent that I guess I'm a salmon swimming upstream because, you know, we've turned into a red state, not a blue state.
Yeah, if you're white in Louisiana, chances are you're just statistically, you're a Trump supporter. But you when I say the man's name, I can see you getting revved up. You have some visceral dislike for him. Why is that?
Well, I don't like his person. I don't like uncivilized people. I don't like, as much as I have sort of a colorful language off the air, I don't like people who are president and who talk like he does. I don't like people who have the policies that he does. I don't like liars. In a courtroom, there's an instruction to jurors, falsus in uno, falsus in omnibus. You lie about one material thing, the jury has a right to discount all of your testimony if they think you're a liar. I think he's a liar, and that's been proved 1,000 times. So I just can't vote for somebody like that. And if he tells you he's going to, you know, make the virus disappear, why would you believe that? I mean, it's just, why would you go take hydrochloroquine, for God's sake?
Well, he will face Joe Biden in 3 debates. The first one is in 13 days. And I think it's fair to say that you would be a more fierce opponent in a debate than Vice President Biden will be. And does the Vice President take the risk of losing to Donald Trump because it's hard to beat a person who doesn't play by any set of rules? And as we know, Trump, as he did with Hillary Clinton, he's possibly going to hover behind Biden, breathing on him and making sounds and trying to intimidate him, and Biden may very well take the bait and respond, but he takes a risk if he gets too hostile of being reduced to a level of which he does not want to be. So what do you make of the debates as we look at them 2 weeks out?
Well, I had the fortune this morning to catch a glimpse of President Trump at a town hall meeting. He could not even talk down a lady that was there with a pre-existing condition. And she confronted him about his repeal and replace problem, a promise with regard to Obamacare. Mm-hmm. He's got repeal down to a science. He's still fighting that. He ain't got any replacement. And he couldn't answer her. So there are some things that I think Joe Biden can wisely and intelligently do. And by the way, if Trump had walked up behind me like he did to Mrs. Clinton at that debate, he'd have been looking directly at my fist because I'd have told him to go back to his corner. But we got Kamala
and
Harris.
And my money would be on you.
Kamala Harris will do that in the vice presidential debates. I like Mr. Biden remaining civilized, calm. I can't stand waking up every morning and wondering, what in the world is going to happen today with Bozo? I mean, what is he going to do?
877-217-5757. Gustavo in Goodwood. Hi, Gustavo.
Good morning. Well, for one thing, one of the things that President Trump might do is sign another peace accord. How about that? But Biden is the one that is always saying that he would like to take Donald Trump behind the gym or behind the dumpster and beat him up. So what is he afraid of? And you looking at your fist against the president? What kind of respect is that? You're crazy.
I've been called worse.
Well, Biden, in his day, he claims to have been a scrapper, and I'm taking him at his word. But let's face it, both of these fellows took a powder in Vietnam, and they're in their 70s, and you would think they were beyond fistic encounters. But there's no doubt that the president tried to intimidate Hillary Clinton. I don't think it succeeded, but the optics just didn't look good for Clinton. Here she is making her case to be president. She's got this much larger individual huffing and puffing and roaming and parading behind her, and the moderators didn't do a damn thing to stop it. Now, the moderators are important in cases like this. You've got to keep civility, or at least try to, otherwise it could get out of control. 877-217-5757. Rose in Mid-City. Rose, you're on with Mary Olive Pearson. Good morning, Rose.
Good morning. Mary, I really appreciate that there's a positive side to this because I agree Joe Biden will do fine, but I don't think that Hillary Clinton did not win.
Huh? All right. What she's claiming that Hillary actually won the election. Well, she did lose in the Electoral College. And the Electoral College is where the action is. It's how the elections are determined. I don't agree with it, but that is the law of the great country we're in. And Mary Olive, the president, I think it's fair to say, is extremely unlikely to win the overall vote. But he could eke out a win in the Electoral College. What happens, though, if he loses a close one? Do you think he's going to leave quietly?
Probably not. He's making noises about it already. But I did see one legal expert on TV explaining, we have a hard date for inauguration in this country, and it's January. It's the first Monday after something, but it's January the 20th this year, I think.
It's always
there. And they said that date cannot pass without us getting a new president. And here's what happens, according to this expert. If there's still a question, if Trump is still raising hell about who actually won, you know who gets to be president? The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. So Mr. Trump, President Trump, whatever you want to call him, he will have a choice. It's kind of a Hobson's choice. It's between Mrs. Pelosi and Joe Biden. So I'm fine with either one of them.
All right. Nancy Patricia Pelosi. Could it happen? Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Mary Olive Pearson. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Ms. Pearson. I have a ball cap that my son gave me for my birthday, and it says, "Let's make lying wrong again." And I think that's a really good policy for our country, is make these idiots stop lying or just call them on it. Thank you, man.
I agree with you.
All right. Well, Mary Olive Pearson, you have been around for a long time, and you are not shy about expressing your point of view regarding the presidential election. It appears Louisiana will go to President Trump, and no Democrat has won this state since 1992 and 96 when Bill Clinton won, and he won big margins in Louisiana, by the way. It was not close, and a fellow named James Carville was handling those campaigns. You knew him well, or know him well. You're still very close, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
Do you talk regularly?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And let me say this. If we wanted to save a lot of acrimony in the state of Louisiana, I suggested to somebody the other day, I said, look, why don't we just spot Trump, Louisiana, and everybody quit fighting with everybody down here. He's going to get our electoral votes. Give them to him. And then everybody go to the house, make peace and love. You know? I mean, I got friends that I can't even talk to them.
Well, I suppose that James Carville and Mary Madeline are not in accord on this election. I don't know. Maybe they are. But there is a way to get around this acrimony, and hopefully we can have peace in our time. We do have a question online, a good one for Mary. We'll spend a few more minutes with her when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Mary Olive Pearson, called affectionately MOP by her friends and a few foes. And she is with us for a few more minutes. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. And a few questions online. I'll get to one or two of them. Here's Kylie downtown asking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's been fighting pancreatic cancer for years, has been in and out of the hospital, is hanging on, and here we are 48 days away from an election, and then January 20th would be the day the new president is sworn in, the new one, or the one who is currently in office. And what happens, Kylie asks, if, God forbid, Justice Ginsburg were to die between the election and the inauguration, what would be the scenario? It seems that Mitch McConnell might very well bring the senators back and try to ram in a conservative justice. Would that be a possibility?
It's probably a probability, considering Mr. McConnell's conduct in the past 3 years. I mean, he'll do anything to satisfy his boss. And his boss, by the way, is not his constituents. It's
what
the
if
president.
His boss is on the way out, though? Let's say Biden's going to be the president.
I don't think they care. I don't think Mitch McConnell cares about anything but Mitch McConnell and himself and whatever. Mm-hmm. And if he wins Kentucky, by the way, that'll be another thing. His election will be the same day as the presidential
election.
So he'll either be the senator from Kentucky or maybe he won't.
But,
you know,
he's got a tough fight. But Kentucky, among the 11 SEC states, went most decidedly for Trump in 2016, and it would seem that it would be very hard for a Republican to win a U.S. Senate race, or excuse me, a Democrat to win a U.S. Senate race in Kentucky, but they do have a Democratic governor.
Well, I will tell you this. I'm talking back to a comment that was made at the signing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act when President Johnson signed that. One of the people that was there said, "There goes the South." They were right.
Okay. Here's David in Lafayette saying he'd like for you to write a memoir, which would be welcome, and saying also that too bad we don't apportion electoral votes in the manner that Maine and Nebraska do. But Maine and Nebraska do it by congressional district, and as we know, the congressional districts are all messed up, Mary Olive. They don't really reflect the country either. For example, Baton Rouge should be a blue district. There are enough people in the greater Baton Rouge area to have a congressional district all our own that would be blue based on the fact that we keep electing Democrats to high office in this parish, and Democrats have been winning here for some time, like Hillary Clinton, like Barack Obama twice, like Foster Campbell, like Mary Landrieu against Bill Cassidy. But yet the district is drawn to take all the black folks out of North Baton Rouge and shove them into Cedric Richmond's district to protect the 6th district for Republican Garrett Graves. Why would we want to have congressional districts determining who wins each individual district in the presidential election?
Well, you wouldn't under the current circumstances. But the problem is you got to go back to gerrymandering. And the problem there is that Republicans have been in charge in Louisiana so long that they do this gerrymandering to satisfy themselves and get themselves reelected and prevent Baton Rouge from becoming a blue district. I ran for Supreme Court basically in the 6th Congressional District several years ago. I carried Baton Rouge, okay?
Right.
And I didn't win the election because two other judges won, but there were 6 judges in that race. I got more votes than 4 of them. But, and I'm a white, female Democrat in Baton Rouge. But you're right, Jim. Baton Rouge should not be in Cedric Richmond's district.
No, it shouldn't be. And Cedric Richmond would not lose if it were not.
That is correct.
This is designed to get as many black folks as possible in one district. That's what it's designed to do.
So that they have 1 vote out of 6.
Instead of 2 out of 7.
Instead of 2 out of 7.
And proportionately, 2 out of 7. See, I'm a baseball guy. I know when you get 2 hits and 7 at bats, it's 286. You bat 286.
So that's more than I know.
That's 28.6% of the population. And the black representation is actually a little bit above that. So it would be fair if 2 African Americans were representing Louisiana, but there was at one time, and they threw Cleo Fields out for a gerrymandered district.
That's correct.
But the Justice Department now says basically do what you want.
Well, whose Justice Department is that? Bill Barr?
Bill Barr.
That great American?
You like that guy? Yeah. You like him?
No.
Your friend James Scarville says he's eating too many cheeseburgers.
Well, I don't know about him, but I mean, I do know that they tell me that the president eats 2 Whoppers every afternoon at 3 o'clock. That could explain his weight problem.
Yeah, he's a big man, and it's big in all the wrong places. But we'll see what happens in the debate. And optics mean a lot.
They do.
I remember Brett Hume, of all people, saying, and I believe it was Brett, might have been Sam Donaldson, but back in the day that Jimmy Carter would make mincemeat of Ronald Reagan in a debate, didn't happen, and that was the pivotal moment in that debate. Biden is older, but he's in much better shape, and the optics may be good for him.
Well, let me say this. He's not that much older. I can speak to that. I'm 76. And here I sit, you know, I'm not infirm at all, but Trump is like 2 years difference in age and his health is worse. Look at Biden and look at Trump and you can see, well, this big fat one over here might not have some good health. This thin one over here who runs and jogs and whatever, he might be healthier. But, you know, and let me say this, Trump is always talking about Biden's acuity in his mental state. Well, let's talk about Trump's. He lies every day.
But he passed that hard test, right? Television.
Oh. Pff.
Man, woman.
Yeah. Really? It's just, you know, it's just all fake. But, you know.
Well, thank God that older people are being received well, but it is curious that we have an age limit on the front end of being president. You have to be 35, but no age limit on the back end. And Trump, by the way, as I've said, he's not going quietly. He will be immediately running for 2024 when he's 78 years old. And who knows, he may be the Republican nominee. He is the Republican Party. This is, after all, was a party that had no platform at its convention. He is the party.
They said that. They said, we have no platform. Whatever Trump wants, Trump gets.
Okay. Well,
he must be Lola. Remember, whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
Yeah, there was a song that I like very much.
By the way, let me make a connection between what you just said about age and Mrs. Matthews in that judge race. We have no minimum or maximum age for judges in this state. We do have a mandatory retirement age for sitting judges, but you can qualify for judge at any age.
That's interesting. I was thinking of that. You could run at 80.
Or 100.
And you could serve one term based on your reading of the law.
Once you become a judge, you can't run for re-election
right.
If you're over 70.
And okay, so it seems that Janelle Matthews may be on solid legal footing, and she's got an extremely adept advocate in Mariala Pearson Mopp. And let's do it again. Thank you, Mariala.
Thank you very
Good
much.
Good to see you. Be safe.